Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
The United Nations has renewed calls for an immediate de-escalation in the Middle East, warning that continued violence risks undermining prospects for peace, worsening the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, and increasing regional instability. So there you go. Well, the UN has said so. That should be that, right? Why is nobody listening? Major Andrew Fox, a very, very good morning to you. I'm hoping you are well.
Very well indeed, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, you say that now, but let's see. The United Nations, they're still a thing, hey?
Yeah, apparently so. Look, a very well-funded thing and a very, very influential thing. When it comes to talking a lot and doing not very much. And I think that's what we're seeing here. We'd all love peace in the Middle East.
Of course.
If only it were that simple.
If
only if you could wish it and make it so.
Yeah, it seems to be that they've got this template and it calls for de-escalation and all parties to respect, blah, blah, blah. Why is that? How have they become an organization that really does nothing when there's real conflict or where there is clearly a situation that is going to move to active conflict, but then just make these meaningless statements once things are already problematic?
Well, you know, unless it's Israel, they're unable to take a position when it comes to conflict. It's very much a case that they maintain this sort of facade of neutrality. But also they've got no real enforcement powers, and that really is the problem here. I think, yes, they've got the International Court of Justice to settle disputes between member states. And yes, there's the Security Council, which can authorize military action in extremis if you can get around the vetoes of various permanent members, which tends to often run into competition. But it's really not much more than a powerless talking shop, except when it comes to, of course, condemning Israel, in which case it can suddenly find its way to producing all kinds of resolutions and reports.
Much like the ANC, I imagine. But the fact is that they've come under tremendous fire. UNRWA has been very, very much exposed, along with the lack of truth and lack of balance in a lot of their Gaza statements. Does this actually impact them with regard to anybody else other than those who support Israel?
Well, in the sense that, you know, there are mechanisms, certainly when it comes to Gaza and the Palestine issue more broadly, that are counterproductive. Let's look at a couple of them. First of all is the language used when we talk about the legal situation. They use the rhetoric and the language of the 1940s and 50s, which is based around decolonization. And of course, Israel never has been a colony. There's nothing to decolonize there. You know, and so, you know, straight away using that language permanently makes it incredibly challenging to find a solution if you can't articulate the problem. So that's a problem. And then, of course, there's the permanent refugee status conferred on generations of Palestinians. Which is really interesting, because a lot of UN member states, by far the majority, recognize Palestine as a state, and yet the UN keeps UNRWA going, which implies that they are refugees within their own state. So that doesn't make any sense either. And of course, it perpetuates the problem, because it gives this idea that these refugees will return somewhere one day. Of course, that the only place they could return to is the state of Israel. And that's not going to happen unless they accept Israel's existence. And even then, probably not. So, you know, there's all these intrinsic structural problems with the United Nations that effectively prolong the conflict and make everyone's lives worse rather than better.
So in terms of Israel, we've obviously seen a lot going on with Iran and the United States. You've made your view, and you continue to make your view plainly known, that this was the way in which the United States went about this was folly. What do you think should happen now?
Well, look, there's two solutions that I can see here. I mean, let's start with the very obvious fact that the Iranian regime is not going to change its behavior. They are not going to be bombed into not believing in 12er Shia religious philosophy. They're not going to change their mind that suffering is a religious duty. They're not going to change their mind that they have to destroy Israel and America to bring about worldwide Islam and the return of the hidden Mahdi. Like, these ideas are not going away through bombs. That means that any deal with them cannot be trusted. It means they will continue to play these silly games when it comes to negotiations. So I can see really two options on the table. If you want to change the regime's behavior, you need to change the regime. So the United States will have to fully commit to a regime change campaign and all the problems that comes with that. Or they give up and walk away. The middle ground, I think, seems to be what we're seeing at the moment, but it can't go on forever. You know, this containment, this punishment, so blocking the Strait of Hormuz to counteract the Iranian bloc, plus bombing the IRGC and all these kinds of locations that we're seeing over the last four nights. That's all very well and good, but eventually the Gulf states are going to run out of missile interceptors. 50% of the world's missile interceptor stocks have been expended already. These will take 40 to 50 months to replace if China lets the United States have the rare earth minerals that it needs to continue building these interceptors.
That's interesting.
The world economy is going to be squeezed, and inflation will continue to rise, and that will exponentially become more painful when global oil reserves run out. So they're already at lows we haven't seen since the 1980s. So the status quo can't go on. So America's going to have to make its mind up. Is it going to commit to actually changing the regime, or is it going to have to walk away? Because I don't see any other real options on the table here.
And even if it does change the regime, the concern that I have is that you've got so many people still supporting the regime from within the system. How peaceful do we think the new democratic new democratic Iran will be?
Well, that's the trouble. You know, the regime change option comes with huge amounts of unintended consequences and chaos. We've seen it happen in Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya and Syria. You know, this is not a good option to take. Is the aftermath going to be overall better or worse than the status quo is the big question to ask. And that is a matter for debate. But yeah, as you point out, the only people in Iran who are in a position to take over at the moment are people who are affiliated to the regime or the armed forces and the IRGC, because they're the only ones with guns in Iran. So is something happening, you know, on the backside that we don't see to get weapons into Iran? I mean, this is all conjecture. We have no idea. But the bottom line is, if the regime won't change its behavior, your options become incredibly limited. And I'm very suspect that bombing will get them to change their behavior. And even if they say they do, I suspect that won't be the case. This is not a trustworthy regime, as we saw under the auspices of the Obama JCPOA, the Iran deal about nuclear capabilities that were signed. They continue to enrich in secret whilst that was in play. So, you know, the Americans have got themselves into a very tricky situation here, and there's no easy or good way out of it.
What about the, and a few of our listeners are asking this, about the if the United States continues to disallow Iran from exporting any oil, the capability with regard to storage, what this means to Iran?
Yeah, well, the problem with oil storage is, of course, is it fills up. And if they can't export it, then that's going to cause real problems for their oil supply, their financial income. All of these things will suffer. The squeeze on Hormuz, the continued bombing, it does really hurt the regime. You know, that's not the case we're making, that it has no effect whatsoever. The question is, what is the strategic end state you're working to? What is the political goal here? What is the political vision of victory? And that's what I don't think we're seeing a clear pathway to yet, because you can cause damage and pain to the regime, but that won't cause them to fall. And if they do fall, the only people with guns to take over are a continuation of the same, who again can't be trusted because they have this insane 12er Shia religious philosophy. So what is the definition of victory here? And I don't think we're seeing a clear articulation other than Trump suggesting he wants Hormuz reopened because of the economic pressures its closure causes, which is where we were before the war, to all intents and purposes. So that's not a victory in any meaningful sense. So it's, incredibly tricky situation.
It is indeed, Major Andrew Fox. Thank you, as always. It is 8:31. Give me your thoughts, your reaction. What do you think should happen? What should the United States be doing, given the fact that it's in this position, whether it was the right decision, the wrong decision? But here it is. What happens now?